trying to
if we could have people sit down, and we will begin the conference committee. We do have a quorum. We are missing some of our members, but we will have to recess. I'd like to adjourn, but we definitely have to recess by 5 minutes to 11. The senators do have to be on the floor at 11 o'clock. So we do have the conference committee report. And I'm going to ask John Fuller.
Bob could probably start if you want.
Okay, Mr. Eloff, do you want to walk us through? But there's no microphone, so you're going to have to go down to the testifiers table.
Oh, here's Fuller.
Mr. Fuller is here, but maybe both of you can be there. You gentlemen would decide how you want to walk us through the draft conference committee report.
Good morning. It's the CCRSF 3337A, so it should say A on the right-hand corner. I don't think anybody else had another copy. And essentially, it does reflect what we did on Thursday. Yes.
Thursday. Yeah.
It's converted into two articles. The second article has a provision on outdoor lighting. Everything else is in Article 1. 115C04, or Section 1, is part of the petroleum tank release compensation fund bill that was Senator Scoy's in the Senate, and that's Section 1. Section 2 is another provision related to that. That's the obsolete language they're repealing. Section 3 is the one we had some discussion on, and which has to do with replacing PVC piping. That was the House language. It did include the House fill piping language on line 26. And otherwise, and the purpose language was, half of it was taken out for reasons that were discussed. Section 4 is the replacement language that was presented to the committee on Thursday, put in a different section. This was the statute that exempted public service corporations from certain provisions of the eminent domain law, and this requires utilities, pipeline companies, to provide a copy of appraisal to a property owner prior to filing a petition to acquire that property through the eminent domain process. Section 5 starts a new set of provisions relating to cost recovery for transmission and renewable energy. This was in the Senate, Senator Dahl. I can't remember, in the House, was it Saylor? But anyway, this is
a Briner.
I'm sorry. Excuse me. And there's no changes there. Section 6 on page 4 simply was a technical change. No changes. Adding the term and standards. Section 7 on page 5. No changes in the side-by-side. Section 8, again, part of the cost recovery, picks up the language about the new exemption from the certificate of need, which is later on in the bill, the subdivision 9, you'll see on the top of page 6, section 9 is part of the three or four sections having to do with bringing solar projects within the SIP program, trying to marry two statutes and give a little bit of an opportunity for solar generation projects to participate in SIP. Section 10 on page 7 is also part of that amendment to current law where solar generation projects can have an opportunity under SIP, a limited opportunity. Section 11 on page 8, again, is part of bringing solar generation within the SIP. You'll see on the, well, it's the same language we had in the side-by-side, the qualifying solar thermal on 8.26, 8.32, solar electric. On page 9, section 12, is an amendment that was in the House file 3729, creating the Energy Commission. The House wanted to keep intact a definition of biomass. This section is in the biomass mandate law, the subdivision 1 you'll see on 9.7, which is somewhat of a dead letter, but the definition is referred to in other statutes, and there was a desire to update that definition. Page 10, line 13, section 13. This is the exemption to, this is part of the cost recovery four sections, and it exempts certain renewable facilities from the certificate of need. However, it does keep commission oversight for prudency with respect to the projects. Section 14 is the compromise language. So this is new in the sense of the language is new. There was a House bill and a Senate bill that took different approaches to sort of reshaping the current legislative electric energy task force. It's done by amending the current task force law, giving an instruction to the reviser to recodify it where most of the legislative commissions are codified in Chapter 3 of the statutes. It transfers any remaining money from the task force to this Energy Commission for their use, provides for a new membership structure, which I'll talk about in a minute. It keeps the current assessment level at $250,000 a year, maximum possible, and, however, brings in petroleum bulk storage facilities as part of the revenue base for the activities of the commission, because the activities of the commissions are broadened to include activities for which it is appropriate to assess those entities. And so on page, with respect to the, I think that's the essence of the changes. With respect to the membership, the House, the Senate acceded to the House in, there's still 10 members. They're still appointed by the Speaker and the Subcommittee on Committees. There's still 4 minority, 6 majority, but the makeup of the majority members has been changed to include a more diverse group of set of expertise because of the broadening of the duties of the task force. So you'll see, and they're identical, so you only have to look at one of them. You'll see on page 11.5 that the named members include the chair of the committee with primary jurisdiction over energy policy, and then the chair or another member of the environmental policy, agricultural policy, and transportation policy committee, and a member of the Next Gen Energy Board. So you have that membership. Okay. There's some language later on that does the transfer of the current money to the Legislative Energy Commission from the Electric Energy Task Force. I think I should say that the reason for changing the duties is that the original duties were part of Prairie Island legislation and were focused fairly narrowly on issues that arose during that discussion in 1994, and this tries to make them more contemporary, flexible, more responsive to the issues of the day, gives authority, mentions some specific legislation such as the renewable standard and the reduction of greenhouse gases, but also allows the new commission to determine if it's an energy-related issue that they have the ability to analyze it, explore it, hold hearings on it. Okay. So that was Section 14. Section 15 is on page 17. This is the Representative Kalin collection of three sections where I think we had a full discussion on that, sort of a pre-filing for a route permit notice, 90 days pre-filing. And then the only new language would be, and it's not really new in concept, on 17.28 to 17.30, there's an ability for, depending on the scope of the route, for a lot of local units of government to request a hearing on this. And so this permits a consolidated hearing and requires notice. So if you receive notice and they hold a hearing, that's sufficient to comply with the requirement to hold a hearing. So that's sections 15, 16, and 17. 17 is technical. That's the Representative Kalin package. Section 18 is the Senator or Representative Westrum amendment. It comes in two parts. The first one was the issue relating to the new standards for the new large projects, the 5 to 25 megawatt projects. And there's two aspects to that. One is in paragraph A, and it says that for a period of time up until July 1, 2009, if an owner of a project elects in writing as part of its application to the local unit of government, the county, to be cited, it can be cited as a small project, meaning it wouldn't be subject to the new public utilities models for siting, which a county is also has to apply for a large project. So that's why it has to be considered a small project, because otherwise at either the state or local level, the requirements that these folks find onerous would apply. So that's A. And then B is something a little different. That was the issue of the DNR, and I think I have this right, a concern that sites could capture the wind resource that would otherwise be available on the state lands. We call them conservation lands. And so what this says is that for those projects, they don't have the opportunity in A. They shall be considered according to the general statute. However, the department can work with them and assist them attempting to get variances if they find it in the public interest to do so. So that's B. That's a subclass of these 5 to 25, and they're treated differently because they are not treated as small, meaning they would be subject to these model ordinances, but there's some language there. The language expresses the thought that DNR should work with these folks, and if they're satisfied it's in the public interest, assist them in trying to get a variance. It doesn't guarantee there'll be a variance granted, however. And then C is on page 19 at the top. Paragraph C is simply a report by the PUC about its activities with regards to variances for these projects in B, the ones that are within the, what's it called, within the wind access buffer zone. And the wind access buffer is a zone, I think, that's generally to ensure the integrity of the wind resource for each project that's not eaten up by an earlier wind energy conversion system. So that's what that refers to. Section 19 is, we discussed it, it's the program that it's going to attempt to give volume purchasing ability to small projects so that perhaps they can acquire turbines. And if they can acquire them, perhaps at a better price. Because as we heard, some of the manufacturers don't even want to deal with them at all if they don't have a sufficient quantity of turbines that they want to purchase. Section 20 on page 20 is the original bill. This is an offshoot of the greenhouse gas reduction goals legislation from 07, and essentially sets up an annual and every other year process to track our progress in achieving the reductions required by last year's law. The annual process is one of legislation that the Commissioner of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency shall think about this and come in and say, here's what we need legislatively to keep on track, or tell us they don't need anything. So it's very flexible. And every other year says, okay, the best, come in and tell us the best data. Where are we? How are we doing, you know, on this process in non-technical language? So if we needed 10 million of something, they'll tell us if we have 8 or 12, and not a more complicated way of expressing it. Section 21 is part of three or four sections relating to the high potential greenhouse gas issue that we discussed. Section 21 is our definitions. You'll see that on line 27 and 28, we're talking about three sets of gases: hydrofluorocarbons, perfluorocarbons, and sulfur hexafluoride. Section 22 is a reporting provision. It has two aspects. Manufacturers have to report on how much of these three gases they sell for purchasers in the they sell to purchasers in the state on an annual basis. And so that's the manufacturers. And subdivision 2 places an obligation on the purchasers themselves to report if they purchase over 100 metric tons of carbon dioxide equivalent. So not necessarily of those gases, but of the ton relates to their equivalency in carbon dioxide. And you'll see in subdivision 3, my understanding is that at least with respect to a utility, there is some federal reporting. And so this says if there's a federal reporting, that would be acceptable as a state reporting can be satisfied if you file a copy of the same report. Section 23 has to do with car air conditioners, mobile air conditioners, motor vehicle air conditioners, and a leakage disclosure. There's a standard way of assessing that set up by what used to be known as the Society of Automotive Engineers, but I think they have another moniker now. But and so there that's to be determined, and then it's to be filed with the state and posted on the PUC and the Attorney General website. I think the notion is that it gives information to a buyer to be informed if this is something that would be of importance to them, and perhaps as a stimulus for manufacturers to use the best available technology to deal with the refrigerants. Section 24 is an enforcement provision that used to have more enforcement. This is an administrative fine provision, and cooperation can result in the fine being reduced or eliminated. That is the high-potential greenhouse gas package. Section 25 is the issue of the termination of wind property easements. We had a discussion. As you'll notice on line 26, is bumped out a year. So there's a two-year window before the repealer becomes effective, and later on there's a charge to the Commissioner of Commerce to develop a factual base of what's going on with respect to this issue. Is it a problem? Isn't it a problem? What's the dimension of the problem? And the ability to come back or the requirement to come back and inform us of what's going on out there and recommendations to deal with what's going on out there. Section 26, I'm sorry, this is another high-potential greenhouse gas section. It's a report from the Commission of Commerce, or Pollution Control Agency, to the Environment Committees. On line 31, identifies the issues, the uses and emission sources of those three high potential greenhouse gases, and suggests options for reducing or eliminating those uses and emissions, and the cost. I think the philosophy is that look at cost-effective ways to eliminate something that's harmful, and if they're there, have some impetus towards instead eliminating those and picking up the cost-effective uses that can accomplish the same purpose. Section 27 is identical language on the solar rating and certification laboratory. There's thought there might be an opportunity. There's only one in the United States, I think one in Canada, and the Office of Energy Security is to look into this, talk with stakeholders, come back and tell us what opportunities there are to develop such a laboratory. Section 28 is related to the Representative Westrom Amendment. It's part two. It's the stakeholder group. As I said, I think the focus would be on the paragraph A, which gives this 1 year till July 1st, 2009, ability for a developer to file and be treated as a small wind developer, which means they're not subject to this model ordinance or model rules. And this says, assembles a body, including four legislators, says, look at this issue, report back to us, tell us if you think what's going on, and should this law be amended in any way, extended. Section 29 is the video franchising study. You see there's an appropriation later on. It's with the University of Minnesota. You look at there's a movement in a number of states to bring that franchising task up to the state level. And this says take a look at that, look at a variety of factors and effects it's had in those states, and report back. And Section 30 is the mapping project. These both were came from the – it's the there were companions in both bodies, this is the House language, Representative Johnson's language or preference, and those are in there. Section 31 is the wind property interest mediation report study I mentioned with respect to the termination of property interests. Section 32 on page 27, is the appropriation. There's two of them for the two one is for the video franchising, and the other is for the mapping. One time, Section 33 is the authorization to transfer unused money from the Legislative Electric Energy Task Force for the purposes of the new Legislative Energy Commission. Section 34 is the revisor's instruction to place this new commission with other commissions in Chapter 3. Section 35 is the repealer on page 28 relating to the Petroleum Release Cleanup Board, and this was our in both sides, and it's obsolete language. It was an assignment for a specific period of time. That time has passed. So Article 2 contains the outdoor lighting. That was a House provision. We talked about it. It regulates standards for lighting installed to replace using state funds, and it sets a number of exemptions and sort of completes the package that was started last year. There was a bill in last year, and half of it was enacted last year, and this is the last. And I think I heard that's it. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Fuller. Are there any questions or comments by committee members? Yes.
Okay. What is your desire, Chair?
For questions or comments?
Right. Are we voting on it right now?
Amendments.
We will be, but I need to know if you agree or if there is discussion or amendments that you wish to offer. Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, I did review the language with Mr. Eloff this morning, and I've got a couple just small amendments to the language that Mr. Fuller and Mr. Eloff worked on Friday. They weren't able to get a hold of me late afternoon, and so whenever it's appropriate, Mr. Eloff, I think, has that language.
Okay, we can entertain that at this time. Mr. Eloff?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think one of them that Representative Westrom and I spoke about this morning is short enough to be done as an oral amendment. This would be on page 18. On line 32, which currently reads, the Department of Natural Resources may negotiate, and the rest of the sentence goes on to say, may negotiate with a system owner regarding siting. The amendment would be to delete may and insert the word shall, and after negotiate to insert the words in good faith. So that line would now read, the Department of Natural Resources shall negotiate in good faith with a system owner.
Representative Western, do you want to speak to that?
Well, Mr. or Madam Chair, Mr. Eloff and I talked about this. The discussion I had with the DNR was that they, in fact, would negotiate variances or work with proposers if needed. This doesn't require a variance to be granted. It just requires that there is good faith negotiations. I thought the shall and good faith reflects closer to the discussion we had. Ultimately, it doesn't require them anything to do anything other than to work with the owners or proposers. So.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion on Representative Westrom's motion? Well, then on Representative Westrom's amendment, does that need to be repeated? On line 18.32, delete may after Department of Natural Resources, insert shall, and after negotiate, insert in good faith. All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Did you have further representative?
The next one, Madam Chair, dealt with just the appointment process, and the original language was a little more balanced with some majority, some minority members on the stakeholder group, and my intention would be to stick with more of a balanced approach, but Mr. Eloff would have the language that was in what we talked about last Thursday.
Okay, that amendment is being distributed.
Madam Chair?
Mr. Eloff.
When I drafted this amendment, within the hour, I did not have the most recent version of the conference committee report, so there's a change on line 1.2 of the amendment in the pages and lines. It should read as follows on line 1.2 of the amendment. Page 24, delete lines 24 to 30, and insert the language that's there.
So we will add that language to the current amendment, if that's okay with Representative Westrom, I assume that is.
That is, Madam Chair, I'll incorporate that.
Mr. Eloff? Mr. Representative Westrom, do you want to address the...
Well, Madam Chair, essentially what the original language we dealt with was the chairs of the committees would appoint some, the minority members would the minority leader would pick a minority member to serve on the stakeholder group, and then of the nine other persons, six would be picked by the majority and three by the minority. The version in front of you puts it all in the Speaker's hands or the majority's hands in the Senate, and it's more just of a balance issue. In the original draft, that's what we had picked out. Essentially, it's going to be cooperation in most of it anyways, but that's the language that is in front of you.
Representative Westrom, I have questions about this, but I realize we are now at 3 minutes to 11, and the Senate does need to recess at this time. So I'm wondering if we could lay this over for right now and pick it up when we reconvene.
That's fine, Madam Chair.
Okay. And so we will recess to the call of the chair. Can we leave our stuff here? Yes, we can.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, any idea when that might be?
I have no idea at this time what the agendas are for the House and the Senate, but we will try to stay in touch with you as best we can and let you know about that.
Madam Chair, I believe the House is scheduled to convene at 12. Generally, that means 12:30.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh, yeah. So we
11 was the original time, wasn't it? Representative?
Okay, the question is if you want the minority.
Oh, we're going to recess right away.
Okay. I think so.
Well,
I'm
going
to have to go.
Well, they always consult. They almost always do.
We don't, Julie, we don't have to be there.
They always do.
Yeah. It's not pretty quick.
It's so much more clean.
Well, 4-year terms make a difference.
Yeah, no kidding. Oh, yeah, shit.
Hey, Senator Rosen. Okay.
Did they say how long you were gone? I know they have to be there for some procedural doohickey.
John, do you have any questions on that?
Well, I have a generalized problem.
It's a very on-Senate way to do things, he tells me.
On-Senate?
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of stuff for me. So instead of all these things that have to be over the top, come up and look at variances or variances. And then, well, you know, if you get that, I think having this new appointing process, it just balkanizes you. If every time you have a task force, you can sort of be inventive, it takes away from your leadership and your centralization. You appoint people, and right. It just, you know.
Well,
can you get an agreement to have it put out of it?
I often say,
I mean, it's not
2-to-1 ratio.
I'm not going to say anything.
I mean, that's what I mean. Yeah. And maybe it is too big. Maybe it should be a smaller group.
I mean, historically, at least in the Senate, it's like there was it's a lot of process for not to make a lot of sense. You look at permits and areas.
Yeah, no, I.
Where do you need legislative
expertise? Well, maybe you don't even need legislative.
But my section for you is boiling into my.
Today, 3-96.
Yeah. Can find something that's like that. It seems commonsensical. Go for it. So, I mean, you're right, your sense of it, you know, we really, you know, that's a problem. What do we do with it?
Let's call the conference committee back to order. And,
boy.
Yeah, it's a fun morning. Yeah, that's from the language that Mike brought in last week.
It's on the
week.
Wrong page of line again.
I know, I got the right one. It's page 4. What? It's actually page 4.
So these are yours.
And I have to correct the page references.
This one, too. Okay, Representative Westrom, I think we were working off of your amendment at the time of our recess.
And Madam Chair, I've talked with Chair Hilty, and he's assured me to have nothing to worry about, and we'll work together on appointments and leave what's in there. So I'm going to withdraw this amendment at this time, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Westrom, perhaps you could address the need for the stakeholder group in the first place, or that it is called a stakeholder group. It seems to me that that we've really taken care of the concern in the first part of your amendment, and I'm wondering why we need a stakeholder group, especially of this size, and I'm also concerned about the cost of it.
Madam Chair, we haven't taken care of the issue other than we've delayed it for a year, basically, to allow potentially a different resolution to come forward. So that's the purpose, as I see it, for the stakeholders group, to have a formal process in place to bring some sort of recommendations back to the legislature next year, hence the reason for July 109 giving us another legislative session, the report due in January of 09 from this group, simply putting a structure in place to address this. You know, I don't foresee it necessarily taking long, but my criticism and others' criticisms in the House of the process that came up with the statewide template was that there maybe wasn't enough focus on the mid-size or the smaller size projects that really bring a different dynamic of economic development and a different dynamic to the marketplace with projects under 25 megawatts. And so I don't know any other way to kind of force the issue and have those involved and interested in that issue to come back with a report if we don't sanction it or authorize it here. The new rules that went through last year, talked to many developers, smaller developers, and certainly ones that you and Senator Anderson and Chair Hilty, I won't name names to embarrass them or whatever it might do, but they did not know these rules were going through with the PUC, and that just demonstrates to me how few of people that are in this world or in this field of wind development really weren't involved in the process, and as a result we got one size fits all regulations. And so that long answer, Madam Chair, but I hope that helps give you some background and reason for it.
So Representative Westrom, this language then about the small wind energy conversion system being able to elect by July 1st of 2009 is not sufficient to satisfy your concern?
Well, Madam Chair, it's sufficient for the next 12 months. It's not sufficient if it, in fact, sunsets and nothing else changes, which is a potential outcome when all the parties get together. But at this moment, from what I know and what Representative Peterson and Eric Heidgerken and others that have been working on this know, we really would like to focus on this size group to figure out if there's a modified type of plan or regulations that need to be looked at.
Representative Hilty.
Well, Madam Chair, I would just point out in support of what Representative Westrom is saying, that this is an issue about which a significant amount of concern has been expressed in the House on a totally bipartisan basis. We've had members of our caucus, as well as Representative Westrom's talk to us about this issue, and I think that this is a reasonable step to try to resolve it.
Any further discussion? I think at this point there is no vote necessary then if you are...
Correct.
If you're no longer pushing your amendment. Okay. Representative Hilty.
Madam Chair, I do have two amendments that are basically clarifying amendments. I think they have been distributed. There's the A25 and A26 amendments.
Shall we take them one at a time, Representative Hilty, the A25 amendment?
Madam Chair, the A25 amendment is a clarifying language from the Department of Commerce. And I do need to correct the page and line reference. That should read page 4, line 5. And as members can see in looking at the amendment and the line references, it's merely language clarifying the issue of utility charges.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Hilty, was this brought forward then by the by our council or by the utilities?
Madam Chair,
Representative Hilty.
Senator Dahl, my understanding is it was given to me by staff, but my understanding is it came from the Department of Commerce.
Okay.
Senator
Madam
Dahl.
Chair, I think if we could get, I know that this portion of the bill that was amended on came from the utilities saying they needed a little more clarification, and just want to maybe hear from them that these changes are suitable to them as well.
Is there somebody that would like to address the committee on this change then?
Maybe someone from Excel. Clyburn.
Thank you for both of you now.
We're not coming back.
Mr. Pfeiffer.
Madam Chair, Dan Pfeiffer with Xcel Energy. Looking at this right now, I haven't seen this before. I think it looks okay. If you don't mind, though, I think I would like to go check with one of my colleagues just to ensure that it is, since I'm not as familiar with this part of this bill as some of the others, but I believe it looks okay right now.
Okay.
Madam Chair, this particular part was amended just recently because of concerns from the utilities on the language to make sure that we had the clarification. Now staff is saying we need to change that further. I guess I just, to get it right, it'd probably be best if we make sure that those that originally brought forward this amendment agree with the changes.
Okay. Senator or Representative Hilty, if we can just lay this aside briefly, then... Well, Mr. Pfeiffer consults with his colleagues.
Certainly, Madam Chair. If I could move then to A26 amendment. Once again, that needs to have a page and line correction. It should, on line 2 of the amendment, read page 18, line 31. And, Madam Chair, members, you may recall this is the discussion we had with the DNR, and at the time we were kind of searching for the appropriate language, which I believe has since been found. This is in Representative Westrom's size election amendment agreement that had been reached with DNR and other concerned parties regarding the issue, and this language simply clarifies the meaning in this context of conservation lands.
Any discussion? And on Representative Hilty's A26 amendment with the oral amendments, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Any further discussion about the bill? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, I just have some issues that I've been thinking about actually all weekend. And it deals with the high potential greenhouse gas reporting section on page 22. And I've been thinking about this and wondering why this bothers me. Number one, because I don't really understand this bill, and that's because we never had a hearing in the Senate. We had a very small, short testimony. And there's been conversations inside and outside of the chambers and of this room and trying to get my hands around this. But I'm just not comfortable with passing a piece of legislation that I have a lot of questions on about, number one, how did you come up with 100 metric tons? I mean, is that one of the recommendations from MCAG, or was that just a figure that was developed? Who is this exactly going to affect, and how onerous is it going to be, if any? And number two, exactly who is it going to affect? And when I did ask that question, I think I got kind of a brief answer, grocers and blah, blah, blah. We're not really sure. So I still can't seem to get my hands around why we have this this language here. And to me, to go in front of my own peers, my caucus members, and say, this is a good conference committee report, except I'm not quite sure about this one provision. I would like to go to them and say, this is good. You can vote for this. And I can't really say that right now with this provision in there. So with your indulgence, I guess perhaps we can go through some questions, Madam Chair, or I could just go ahead and move to delete or remove this section out of the bill.
Senator Rosen, perhaps we could call Mr. Dayton and Ms. Allison Wolf to the table to answer questions, if that's okay with you.
It was bipartisan in the House, wasn't it?
And perhaps you could articulate your specific questions, Senator Rosa.
Sure. I was just waiting for you to give me the go-ahead. Mr. Dayton? Dayton?
Yes, okay. Dayton.
And we have discussed some of my questions as far as where did the 100 metric tons of quantity, how was that developed?
Madam Chair, members of the conference committee, there is a recommendation from MCAG.
Mr. Dayton, just state your name for the record.
I'm sorry.
Please.
My name is Charles Dayton. I'm a volunteer lawyer for the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. And I was a member of the MCAG. There is a recommendation from the MCAG to require a registry of global warming gases. This is a small fraction of the global warming gases, but comes out of that recommendation. The 100 tons is consistent with the number that the PCA uses for sulfur dioxide regulation, 100 tons. Now, it is a fairly low threshold in terms of who would have to report. And you may want to think about that. I think we said that it's about 1,000 people that would have to report, including automobile service stations that use that much air conditioning fluid, and the larger grocery stores that have big chillers. I think the concern is at the retail level rather than at the than at the manufacturing or industrial level. It's also used by electrical utilities, particularly as an insulator in electrical transmission and distribution. But the 100 tons would require reporting from approximately 1,000 users in Minnesota. The agency people who are knowledgeable about this say that they would start with the larger users first, obviously, to try to get at the big numbers. I mean, one of the problems with having a reporting requirement and trying to tell you exactly whom it's going to affect is that it's a chicken and egg problem. We're trying to have a reporting requirement to find out where this stuff is used and how it's used. So that's what I can say about the 100 tons. We're not married to the 100 tons.
Senator Rosen.
So that was just a figure that you just came up with, and then you're figuring out at this point who that's going to affect.
It's your date.
A little broad, though, doesn't it? 1,000 folks, basically. That's pretty broad.
Mr. Dayton.
Madam Chairman, Senator Rosen, it's pretty broad. Yeah.
And Mr. Dayton.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You're targeting right now just the three gases. Are there recommendations from MCAG or in the future to target the other gases? And how much more is this reporting going to happen and be occurring?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen.
Mr. Dayton.
There are six gases that are specifically enumerated in the Kyoto Treaty and for which every country in the world has to report to the United Nations. The three major gases are carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide. The three lesser gases are the three that we've referred to in this bill, so that's where those three gases come from. So we're particularly targeting those. I don't anticipate that this is going to be expanded to other gases. These are the ones of concern. I can never tell what science will come up with in the future, obviously.
And Mr.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Dayton, the MCAG recommendations, though, they just said these three gases. Is that correct? Or did they also make recommendations for the other three gases?
Well,
Mr. Dayton.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, most of the MCAG report was directed at the other three gases. This is the only recommendation of some 50 recommendations that addresses hydrofluorocarbons, perfluorocarbons, and sulfur hexafluoride.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Mr. Dayton and Ms. Wolf, what do you expect from this reporting? I mean, what's the end result? Why the report? Just to find out, to get your hands around the leakage of these gases, and you suspect or you have knowledge that there is leakage going on with these gases?
Madam Chair, Senator
Mr.
Rosen,
Dayton.
There's quite a bit of literature about these particular gases, and EPA has undertaken some voluntary programs in various industries, not all industries that deal with these, but some industries that deal with these gases, to try to get a voluntary control. We know that there is leakage. We can only estimate in a very rough sense what the leakages are, what the losses are from these gases. I don't know if I've answered your question, but the EPA reports that there is leakage and that this is an area where they expect increases in the emission of global warming gases over the next 10 years. In many gases, we hope to see decreases, but the projection is that these will increase over time.
Senator Rosa.
Can you talk a little bit about the reporting and how is that going to work? How's that going to work? Just tell me the process of the reporting of the tons that are bought.
Mr. Dave.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm assuming, just as a matter of common sense, that the agency would identify the kinds of uses that are defined in the bill and would send notices to the people that are supposed to report. There are some reports that are filed with the Environmental Protection Agency. now that also cover these gases by utilities, and that's why we've provided in a paragraph in the report that those reports that are already being filed would suffice.
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, to the witness, and this provision kind of came, I don't know, some of us in the House, so it came later in the process, so we aren't real familiar with this provision, but where do these gases come from? Is it air conditioning units? Is that what's targeted, or where? Who's going to primarily be affected if we, with these reporting requirements?
I want to see it. Yeah, okay, Professor, give me one though.
Madam Chair and Representative Westrom, a list of the principal uses of these gases are mobile air conditioning, that's just car air conditioners, refrigerants, aerosols, electric power systems, foam insulation, the manufacture of semiconductors, solvents, and fire extinguishers. Those are the principal uses that we're aware of.
Madam Chair, Mr. Dayton, were you involved in the early versions of this bill? Because I know this provision took many, at least several changes, revising it down, because there was some of the early provisions were probably more where your group or somebody's trying to lead to eventually, but this at this point seemed to be all they could get. What was their ultimate, what was the original bill trying to
Mr. Wilk.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrom, and I
Mr.
Remember the portion of Senator Rosen's question that I didn't answer. I mean, the objective here is to provide information to the legislature, and I would anticipate that that this would lead to a rulemaking process at the Pollution Control Agency, which is what was recommended by the MCAG. The original bill, in answer to your specific question, had three provisions that related directly to automobile air conditioning fluid. One was to ban outright, as Wisconsin has done, a small can of less than of 12 ounces or less that's used by do-it-yourself mechanics to replace air conditioning fluid in their vehicles. There was, and that drew a great deal of opposition, and it was dropped. There was also a provision that would have required the state to shift to other air conditioning fluids for manufacturers where a manufacturer had sold 1,000 vehicles using an alternative fluid with lower global warming potential in another jurisdiction. That was also dropped. The third provision is still in the bill, and that is a provision that says that automobile manufacturers must file the information that they have available and is on websites of the Society of Automotive Engineers as to the leakage rates of their air conditioning systems, and that information would then be published on the website of the Minnesota Attorney General's Consumer Division.
Any further questions? Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair. Mr. Dayton, on the sources that you list here, are there known alternatives to the particular greenhouse gases here that you're targeting?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Dayton.
And Senator Dahl, yes. And one of the recommendations of the MCAG was that the rulemaking would ban the uses where that can be done at a negative cost. And that's one of the reasons that this recommendation came out from the MCAG as one of those which saves money rather than cost money.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I guess what I'm looking at when I look at this study is that If we can get this information not only to the PCA, we can also let these companies or whoever is using these materials the opportunity to know that there are alternatives. Maybe they are unaware of this particular gases, that they have harmful effects, and that there are alternatives. They could be educated at that point for alternatives that may even be cheaper. Is that thinking correct?
Mr. Dayton?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I think that's what the agency would do, is use the reporting process as an educational tool as well.
Thank you.
Further questions? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, of course, the debate still goes on about global warming, and there, you know, we're still have a very active debate on that issue. And I am just trying to think how to move this bill, this entire bill, forward, and to accumulate some votes from my side. And because otherwise, I understand where this bill originated, and I appreciate your work on MCAT, for Mr. Dayton, and I've told you that. Okay. And this has got to be a very interesting whole process, which you're involved in right now. But it's very hard for me to just sit back and say, well, it's okay that we didn't hear it in the Senate and that we're going to include it in this conference committee report, when I think the whole debate is still at large about all these gases and global warming and climate change. And I'm the one on my side that is the strong believer. I'm pushing for all the work that we did last year, and we've done some great work. So with that, I think I am going to make a oral amendment, Madam Chair, to delete sections 22, 23, 26, and I think 21, actually.
21, 22, 23, 24, and 26. Representative Hilty.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I would strongly oppose that amendment. As Senator, I would point out that as the testimony has indicated, there were provisions in this bill that were regarded as controversial in the House. Those were removed by my amendment in the House. Once that issue was resolved, I don't believe we heard any opposition to the bill in its current form. This bill came up for a vote in the House, the only elements were these provisions and the preceding two articles, or I guess only one now. Section 20 was the other part of the bill. The bill passed in the House with 109 votes, including every member of my Energy Committee, save one. This bill at this point is not a controversial bill. It was recommended unanimously by the working group of the Governor's Climate Change Advisory Group. It's part of the final recommendations to the legislature in the report from the Commissioners of Commerce and the Pollution Control Agency. And it's actually much less, as Mr. Dayton pointed out, than was recommended by the governor's climate change advisory group. They actually recommended entering into a real rulemaking process regarding this. And all of this is doing is
saying, we don't really have enough information to make rules about this. We need to gather information. And I don't know why anybody would be afraid of gathering information about this. If it turns out that the information that we acquire says this is not really a major problem, that there's very little leakage, that we don't really need to worry about it, that would sort of settle the question. And what your amendment proposes to do is to leave the question unexamined, which I don't think is, under the circumstances that we have regarding any of these issues, an appropriate way to go.
Senator Rosen.
Point well taken, Representative Hilty. I understand that. I am also just trying to make a point that there are things in this conference committee report that the Senate side has not had a chance to hear, and that I think there is a tremendous amount of compromise in this bill. This is the one issue that still holds a lot of questions in my mind, and so that was the reason for my amendment.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I would point out that there are provisions in this bill that the House has not heard either, one of the more prominent ones being the wind easement provision from the Senate that was not heard in the House, and that, in fact, there's a great deal of concern about among many of our House members. I think we did have a reasonable compromise on these issues, and I am very reluctant to start breaking that up over a question of whether we need information or not.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Dayton, I just wanted to clarify. The other day I asked the question, and I just want to clarify this. The money for this study is already within the department to do. Is that it's no new money would be applied towards doing this study. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, that is correct.
Thank you.
Any further questions or comments on the amendment? Representative Westrum.
Well, Mr. Dayton, could you tell me again who you're representing? I didn't think it was the department, but maybe I misheard.
Mr. Day.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrum, I don't represent the department, but they did have a fiscal note which reflected what I just testified to. I represent the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, which is a very forgettable name, much to my regret.
So, Madam Chair, what was the cost,
Representative Westrum,
on the fiscal note for this study? Because ultimately, if they're taking resources for this, it's something else that they're going to not do. Or,
Madam Chair, Representative Westrum, I may need some help here because I don't know how the funding process works. But the fiscal note was a report of zero in terms of any demands on the general fund.
Why don't we see if somebody's here from the MPCA or Commerce that could comment on this? Garvey, Deputy Commissioner. Welcome, Deputy Commissioner Garvey.
Madam Chair, members of the conference, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner to Minnesota Department of Commerce and Director of the Office of Energy Security. The Pollution Control Agency's fiscal note on this provision did not show any positive numbers. They felt that they could handle the reporting collection and publication on the Attorney General's website in the ordinary course of their activities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Westrum.
So, Mr. Garvey, and I understand you're not at the PCA, but 1,000 potentially looks like 1,000 reporters. That seems like a lot of work for somebody. Is it so little work that we don't have to fund it? I mean, if we can pass studies that we're going to have 1,000 people sending in documents and we don't have to charge for it. It seems like we're taking the money from something, and I don't know what it would be, and that's the department's discretion. But it certainly is interesting that 1,000 reports wouldn't be a financial consequence to the department, and there might be something else we could do, or it might help balance the budget in the bigger picture of things. The other thing, Madam Chair, and I think it's unspoken here, as I think about it, you know, the 1,000 people reporting are probably private business owners who have all they can do to stay in compliance with government regulations we pass, and nobody pays them to do it. They don't have a state agency budget. They can just hire somebody or have somebody do the data, filling out the data they need on the form. So, you know, I do know there's going to be some concerns in our caucus in the House. There was 109 votes, but as you commingle several bills together, that's not a clear representation of member support, and this was certainly a provision that several members had questions about. Work to neutralize it as much as possible if it wasn't removed, and so I think Senator Rosen raises some valid points.
Representative Westermer, I guess the deputy commissioner left. I didn't know if you wanted a comment from him or not. Deputy Commissioner, I'm not sure if you want to respond to Representative Westrom or not.
You sure can.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the conference, Representative Westrom. I can't speak to, with any kind of specificity, to the Pollution Control Agency's specific fiscal note on this particular set of provisions. I can sort of say, as a person within the administration that has sort of prepared sets of fiscal notes, that as a rule we sort of look at what the request is and whether it is consistent with the kinds of things we can and should be able to do within the normal charge of our activities. Frequently, the collection of information is one of those kinds of things that we consider within normal charge. We then try to set up the collection of that information in the most convenient way for the rapporteurs as well as for us. I believe that's the analysis that would have gone into this from the PCA's perspective. It doesn't mean that there's no cost, and there's either to the agency or certainly to the reporters, but it means that the costs, at least from the agency's perspective, could be absorbed in the ordinary course of their activities.
Thank you. Any further questions or comments about Senator Rosen's amendment to remove sections 21, 22, 23, 24, and 26 from the conference committee report? And on that motion, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
Motion does not prevail. I see that Mr. Evans has entered the room. Maybe he could answer the question.
I have another oral amendment.
Okay. Let's just get Mr. Evans to respond to Senator Dahl's question first. Mr. Evans, I'm not sure if you've seen. What's that? Have you seen the language change that's recommended, Mr.
Madam Chair, members of the committee? Yes. I'm Rick Evans with XL Energy. They showed it to me a few minutes ago. I guess I'm always curious about what brought a change about, but as I read it, I don't see that it seems to do what we had hoped the language originally would do. So.
Okay.
Any further questions or comments? Well, then let's look at the 825 amendment again.
Madam Chair, I would move adoption of the 825 amendment.
With the oral changes also to change the page to 4 and line to 5.
Correct, Madam Chair.
On that motion, then, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I understand from Mr. Fuller that there is a oral amendment that is appropriate regarding an effective date. I think he needs to clarify that.
Okay. Mr. Fuller?
Yeah, members, in reviewing the document, I think there may be four that you might want the immediate effective date because it requires action before August 1st. Page 19, line 4. The size election. That's problematic. I don't know if you want. That's not necessary, but we didn't consider it. Do you want that in effect immediately? Because it will run from then from August 1st to July 1. Or Representative Westrom, that's your amendment. Did you want people to be able to elect as soon as possible? Or?
Right. Mr. Fuller, that would be my intention.
Representative Westrom. So, Mr. Fuller, you're suggesting that we add a line that says?
Yes, this section is effective.
The day following final enactment?
Yes.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I would make that motion.
Okay. On Representative Hilty's motion, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The next one?
Madam Chair, page 25 after line 12, this would relate to the section on the stakeholder group, which requires action by July 30th. So I think that's required to be effective immediately. That's the commissioner to set it up, so the sooner the better.
So, Mr. Fuller, line 13, maybe, after the
right.
At the end of the paragraph there?
Yeah, these would all be at the end of the second, page 25 after line 13.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd move that amendment.
So on Representative Westrom's motion, any discussion? And all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Then, Madam Chair, page 26 after line 13. This is the video franchising study. The University of Minnesota, it's not required, but they want to report back by February 1st, 2009. So I think it would be advisable here to have an immediate effective date. Gives them 3 months to get going.
I'll move that, Madam Chair.
Okay, then on Representative Johnson's motion, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, on page 27, the Wind Property Interest Mediation and Report, you'll see it requires action by July 1, 2008. So on page 27, after line 16, the same immediate effective date is advisable.
Madam Chair, I would move that amendment.
On Representative Hilty's motion, any discussion? All those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Madam Chair, the next one is more of an inquiry, which is page 17. The section beginning on line 14, which requires 90 days notice, I'm not sure if there's, you know, this creates problems in mid-course for anybody. I haven't thought about it, actually, but I don't know if you want to. So starting immediately, this one has an immediate effective date. They have to give 90 days notice, and we may want to think about how that works for a project that we might want to refine that effective date in some fashion to make sure it doesn't catch people midstream, and unless nobody thinks it's a problem. But
This is section 15 you're referring to, Mr.
Right.
Fuller? There is a, there on 17.21, it says this section is effective the day following final enactment.
Right, Madam Chair, and that may be the problem in that it says at least 90 days before filing an application, the applicant shall provide notice to each local unit of government. So if somebody files an application tomorrow, this is in effect, and you know, if that's what's seen as the right thing to do, then it's not a problem. But we just never thought about it. I don't know if it catches anybody midstream and is unfair or not.
Do you have a recommendation?
I would ask the utilities if they have a concern about it. If they don't, if there's nothing happening, I mean, it's what is it for? It's for a route. No, let's see, what is it for? Yes, it's for a route. I would ask the utilities if they think it's a concern. If it's not, then it's not. But it's usually when we have something that catches a stream of activity, we may say, you know, and applies to applications filed on and after or something like that. You know, and this.
Okay. Mr. Evans is back there. Maybe he can respond. Mr. Evans.
Madam Chair, Rick Evans with Xcel Energy. Once again, we're in Mr. Fuller and Mr. Eloff's debt for bringing this to our attention. I don't know that we have any particular process going on right now that would be jeopardized by this, but I think there's a good chance that we would, because we are very active now in proposing a number of transmission lines. So if we could postpone the effective day, Mr. Fuller and Mr. Eloff probably have a suggestion as they think about it. That would probably, it would at least avoid a problem. I'm not aware of one right now, but I suspect if I called our transmission folks, I might find out that there are some that are in mid-process.
Okay. Senator Dahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just suggest that we take the 90 days as our lead and just say anything for, you know, effective 90 days out from today or final enactment. And that, you know, you've got your 90 days right there. So it's still going to be a few days before things would be finalized here, but I think that would include anybody from that point on. They'd have their 90-day notice.
Mm-hmm.
So the effective date would be 90 days from now, you're saying? After final enactment.
Right, correct.
Mr. Evans?
I mean, I guess as I think about it, that would require us to send a notice on the day that this is enacted if we had one that was on the cusp, I suppose. Well,
no, actually, it doesn't.
That's no, it wouldn't.
It seems to me that you would have 90 days before you'd have to send a notice.
Right.
Okay. Representative Hilty, do you have further comments?
Madam Chair, I would simply say I think Senator Dahl's solution should be adequate, solve the problem, considering that this bill, at least in the House, has been pretty thoroughly vetted, and no one has raised the concern. So I don't think there's a lot of things going on out there that people are currently concerned about, and given that this would be a 90-day period in which they become aware of the law and would have ample time to meet it, I think that's a good amendment.
Representative Westrum.
So, Madam Chair, I mean, August 1st would be close to 90 days, but as the thought, and Mr. Fuller, would you is it often we write in 90 days following enactment? I've seen the day following enactment or August 1st typically, but is there any problem with that, or do we just write 90 days and it might be August 10th, it might be August 15th?
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Representative Westrum, we do different. It's unusual, but we do things like that. I mean, the other side of the coin, which I didn't mention, is maybe you want them to comply with the law. I mean, that's the other side of the coin, but we could do that. August 1 is what? If we May 15th, 60th, it's close.
Yeah.
Might not say, if you're really concerned, say September. I mean, it's usually better to put a date in there. Then people don't have to go look and find out what the effective date was. And, you know, it's so you just, like September 1 or August 15th or is I think a safer practice, so people know when they look at something what the law is, rather than scrambling around to find the effective date, because those won't be in the statutes.
So, Madam Chair, I guess if people are okay with that, I would just move September 1, 2008 as the effective date for this.
Is that a motion, Representative
Westrom? That is, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Westrom's motion then that the effective date be changed to September 1st, 2008. Is there any discussion? And all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Rosen, you had another amendment?
Yes, I did have another oral amendment on Section 22, page 22. And there's a couple things, Madam Chair, that I'd like to point out. I guess I'd like to have clarification. In Section 22, Subdivision 1, it talks about the beginning of October 1st of each year and thereafter. The manufacturer of high greenhouse gas must report to the agency. And then again, on Subdivision 2, October 1st, and each year thereafter. I'm just trying to get this straight in my mind. And then, of course, since Section 23, Subdivision 1, beginning January 1st, a manufacturer selling or offering a sale must 90 days prior to the initial sale or offer for sale, report to the commissioner the leakage rate, blah, blah, blah. And then you go on to Section 26 and the reporting. So by February 1st of 2009, the commissioner of the PCA shall submit a report to the legislature. So is that, I guess my question is, all this reporting and accounting of the purchasing and leakage and all this, is that for the entire year, or is that from just October 1st to the beginning of year when this report is filed? And that's my number one, my first question. And my second question, after the February 1st, when the legislature gets this report, is that when rulemaking is going to start, or is that when we just every year thereafter we get another report every year?
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, first of all, regarding Section 26 and the report, what's being reported is merely the sources. It isn't yearly totals.
Does it say that?
And there is no provision anywhere in the bill regarding rulemaking. The reason rulemaking was mentioned is that that was the recommendation of the Governor's Climate Change Advisory Group. But we're not doing that here. So if rulemaking ever was a consequence of this, it would only be after the reporting was done and the conclusion was reached by the legislature or by the PCA that rulemaking was appropriate.
Madam Chair.
And that would require further legislation.
It would, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty, then would that, the reporting, as you say, the sources, is that for the entire year? Or is that as of starting October 1st?
Representative Hilty.
Well, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, my understanding of, since it's simply what is asking to be reported, and I read from that section, the report identifies the uses and emissions sources of these gases. So I don't think that there's a time frame involved here. The reporting to the agency is yearly, but the report from the agency to the legislature regarding the sources is just what the sources are. You know, if there's a source that sells one of these gases in sufficient quantity into the state one time, then I presume that it would be identified as a source. But I don't think there's a time frame that applies to this particular provision.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, Representative Hilty.
Senator Rosen.
I'm just trying to also get my hands around what is this report from the commissioner, right? Is there an outline from some other state or some federal reporting that they're going to follow, or they have to come up with their own report, develop their own report?
Representative Hilty.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I believe that as with a number of other provisions that are contained within the report to the legislature, the final report from the Commissioner of the Pollution Control Agency and the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce, called the recommendations from the Climate Change Advisory Group to the legislature, that the Pollution Control Agency and the Department of Commerce have the responsibility for overseeing all of the activities regarding the implementation of the recommendations of the Climate Change Advisory Group. That is their responsibility. That responsibility was given to them in the Next Generation Energy Act in the last session. And they can figure it out.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Representative Hildy. And these are questions that I think are fair to be asking about this piece of legislation. How is this going to work? And as Representative Westermstead, how onerous is this going to be for the person who is filling this out? Is it going to be a problem? Is it going to be a lengthy report? Do they have to hire somebody else to do it? How much money is it going to cost them? It is real questions and real concern, especially if you are a smaller business owner. And so that's I've been troubled greatly about this 100 metric tons. And as Mr. Dayton said, I think that is something that somehow they pulled that figure out, and I think that's an area that we could work on, maybe make this language here a little more palatable so I can go back to my colleagues and say it's been worked on, I understand it better, and you'd be safe to know that not 1,000 folks are going to be affected by it. These are the folks that are going to be affected by it. But we do need to get our hands around these gas emissions. With that, I guess I am looking for some counsel as far as what to amend the 100 metric tons on page 22, line 13. And I was thinking of 1,000 metric tons. Maybe I'm a little aggressive. I don't know. So I'm not sure if Mr. Dayton or Ms. Wolf would like to comment on that.
Madam Chair, I would rather think in terms of 500.
Maybe Mr. Dayton could come to the table, though, and give us some guidance on this. Senator Dahl, in the meantime.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I my concern is, and I know where you're coming from, Senator Rosen, in changing this number is not, I'd rather not it be so much about whether how many individuals or companies might be affected, but whether or not the number that is, you know, it's the threshold of these gases that we consider that we need to start addressing. And if that means it's 500 metric tons, that's the threshold we should be at, because that's where the concern is for the environment. I'm fine with it, but if it's a matter of just that we want to knock down the number of people who have to file a report, I'd rather that we keep it at that number if that number has been determined, that's the threshold that we're looking at. So maybe Mr. Dayton can address that. I don't know.
Mr. Dayton.
Well, Madam Chairman and Senators and members of the committee, you know, I'm not an expert on this. I have discussed it with folks who are, and a 500 ton, metric ton, I think, would probably be sufficient to pick up most large users. 1,000 seems a little high. I mean, I can't exactly tell you how many people would be in the category if we went to 500, if we went to 1,000. I would urge you to stick at about 500 if you want to change it. It's because the purpose here is to get information. I understand the concern about burdening smaller users, but I think we would be comfortable with 500. We would not be happy with 1,000, but.
Also, I realize the MPCA is not here, but those of you who did hear testimony, it
I seem to recall that the MPCA was on record as supporting this bill. Is that correct? Mr. Dayton?
Madam Chair, PCA representatives were present in the hearing room and testified with respect to the fiscal note, and they did not oppose the bill, and they said that they would provide the staff to go forward with the bill. So if that's supporting the bill, I think that that's correct in terms of saying it is the position of the agency that we support the bill. I don't know that they ever actually said that.
Okay.
Madam Chair, to that point, I would...
Representative Hilty.
I would mention that, as I have previously. This is one of the recommendations that's included in the report to the legislature from the PCA and the Department of Commerce.
That's right.
Madam Chair, Representative Hilty.
Senator Dahl.
Is the recommendation 100 metric tons is what should be studied, or was there another number that was part of that recommendation?
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, that was not, there was no specific recommendation. The recommendation, as mentioned earlier, was actually for rulemaking.
Okay.
And we're talking about trying to find out enough information to make rules in some rational way.
So basically, this is a screening. This is to find out what's out there so that we can come back to the legislature and have rules about it, but we need to determine, first of all, what's being emitted.
And, Madam Chair, if I might, it has occurred to me that probably in retrospect, we might agree that there would have been a good idea to take an approach this cautious to the use of some other substances, like back when everybody thought that asbestos was the greatest thing anybody ever thought of for using in all kinds of industrial and residential purposes.
Madam Chair.
Senator
I'd
Rosen.
I'd like to make an oral amendment then, please.
And
to Section 22, Subdivision 2, Line 13, to change the word or the number 500 or 100 to 500.
Representative Westrom.
Madam Chair, for staff, this clause, does it have a sunset on it, or is it in perpetuity? Maybe that's the other way to address it, that we gather data for a couple of years and move on, but I don't recall if there's a sunset clause in here already or not.
Mr. Eloff, can you respond?
Yes, Madam Chair. Section 22 in both Subdivision 1 and Subdivision 2 says beginning October 1st, 2008, and each year thereafter. And then there is no sunset day. So the gathering of the information will continue.
Well, so, Madam Speaker, or Madam Chair, sir.
Representative
Perhaps a 2 or 3 year sunset clause would be worth adding into this section as well.
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said adding a sunset clause, and maybe Mr. Eloff could figure out some quick language for a 3 year sunset clause. Or something while we address this amendment by Senator Rosen. Senator Rosen, is something like that more palatable to you, do you think, in some of your members? Or
so, Representative Westrom, are you asking that Senator Rosen remove her amendment?
No, Madam Chair, I'm just curious if that all in addition helps her with her concerns as it would mine and I think others, but in context of this amendment, we can do it separately. We can do them jointly. I'm just trying to get the pulse of the members.
Madam Chair,
Senator Rosen,
and Representative Westrom, that's a very good idea actually, but, because I would think that once you find your source, you have your source, so you don't have to keep reporting on that. Is that correct? I would think. I think that's a very good idea to just say, because once we do the rulemaking, So do you want me to pull my amendment?
Or vote on it, and we can move on to the sunset clause.
Madam Chair.
Representative Hilty.
We are told that the House is under call. So we're going to have to go upstairs. I would say I was willing to accept the Rosen Amendment for 500 if you want to mess with this more. I'm going to be in a position of opposing any amendment to this portion of the bill. You can count the votes. And if you want to continue this, we'll have to continue it after the call of the House is lifted. Otherwise, we could wrap it up.
What is your pleasure here? Want to vote on your amendment, Senator Rosen?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Hilty, I am just trying to get some more votes for this bill. That's what I'm
Senator
trying to
Rosen,
do.
Senator Rosen, I said I was prepared to accept the 500, and I said if we want to further amend this section, I will oppose all amendments.
Well, I think what Representative, Madam Chair, and what Representative Westrom was saying was quite reasonable. I don't know how long this reporting is going on. This is actually the first discussion that we've had, a very good discussion that we've had over this section. And I'm sorry you're upset about that, but I do think it's sensible for us to have this discussion about this very important measure.
Okay, I think I'm going to call a recess until to the call of the chair. Thank recess.
It ain't just mine, Hilty. Here.
What's going on?
Marty.
I think I took the 500 deal.
Marty.